I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on August 23rd, 2020. Welcome to my world, where I explain the sciences behind the system that runs pretty well everything. And at the top, of course, you have conology, a term I coined years ago to do with the art of persuasion by the elites, using professionals to give your opinions and to fool you. And any good con, when you've all heard about confidence tricksters, it's much higher than even the confidence trickster, because confidence tricksters never work in such big teams for their stings. But what you do find is that they pick their target, and when they pick their target, the target must basically get involved in the game and consent to it. Generally, I think they only think they're going to get something for nothing. That's how it generally works. And you can see how in 20 years, really, and before that as well, of course, with free this and free that, if you buy two, you can get 10 and all this nonsense to do with shopping and saving. It's called mousetraps in the trade, as they call it, in public relations and marketing. And so they offer you all these little things to pull you in. And when they pull you in, they want your name, address, and phone number, your DNA, and everything else. You know, maybe even your firstborn, depends what you're getting. And you comply with it, thinking you're going to win. And it's based on winning, the game theory too, on winning. This idea that everybody's out for themselves, and they like to win. And sure enough, I've met people who are addicted to gambling. Maybe lots of you out there too may have similar experiences with people they know, and maybe even relatives. And it's a real addiction. You'll meet them. They're not into heavy drinking generally and things like that. It's just gambling. And it's the feeling that they're winning something that is their big high, and that the release of tremendous endorphins, and they feel fantastic at the time. They've done something. They've got value suddenly. And it's of course, it doesn't last long because they've got to win again if they can, but the house never loses, as they say in gambling. It doesn't matter how, if you keep going back and back, you lose it all again, and a lot more besides that. And it really is a bad addiction. And some good books have been put out there by people who were addicted to gambling and who've got out of it with a lot of help, etc. But it shows you how it destroys our lives. And don't forget that, you've got to remember too, there's a whole industry based around gambling, massive industry. And you don't think about it as except what you see, like roulette tables or horses or dogs, or the dog tracks and so on. But there's a massive science behind it too, to prompt the customer to the next step, the next step, and the next step, always with the lure of winning something extra. And a whole, as I say, a whole science behind it. Well, it's the same with all conology. You are the target, and governments go to no ends using your tax money to employ people who are awfully good at what they do. Some are awful as well, mind you. They come up with children's ideas that have been done before, but they're well connected because we live in a terribly corrupt society. But these persuaders, these advanced type persuaders, understand behaviorism and psychology and consumerism, with the Bernese techniques too, that he got from his uncle, supposedly his uncle Freud. And of how the unconscious drives the unconscious to give you, again, self-worth and things like that. Again, getting back to winning and what you want to, and what you like to have. But you know, if you've got common sense, you can never afford this. Or even if you could afford it, you might not be able to afford the upkeep on a very expensive top-class Rolls Royce or something like that, or even insurance on it, for that matter. So you don't do it, generally you don't. So the idea is to make you really, really greedy, and through motivational techniques, because that's what the motivational people do to you, with their hand flapping on stages and run up and down, to stop you thinking for yourself, to make you feel excited, and then they sell you the idea or the product, and the idea is the product, and you buy it from them, the techniques of how to do it, but it's short-lived again. It's a very short-lived lived idea that you're omnipotent to an extent. You can browbeat anybody if you just scream loud enough and keep insisting and demanding. That's what most of it's really based on. And they produce an awful lot of unpleasant characters. And so we're all fed up with them. I'm sure you've met lots of salesmen like that too. And women too. Women are better at it, actually. If you look at the drug companies, they employ attractive young women and who are dressed to the nines with the best expensive clothing to go around to doctors' offices. And they drop off after having a little friendly chit-chats on first-name basis and so on. They drop off lots of free drugs to try by their drug companies for the doctors to start dishing out. Everything works on basic psychology and human nature, and you exploit it, and it works awfully well, in fact. So, getting back to chronology, everything is run by the art of chronology. Many years ago, I remember reading a book about politics, one of the many books. I was never really into politics. I knew it just instinctively. It was a lot of nonsense and a technique of just managing the general public for some other group, obviously, above them. Because the people you met or you heard about us on TV weren't the brightest. They were pattern merchants, as we call them. Again, salesman types, but they were not the brightest of all. And if they were tripped up by a good reporter in a very quick interview, during what they call a flash interview on the steps of number 10 or whatever it was, or the Parliament building, they'd often quit back the wrong thing. It would get them in trouble. So they were always taught by their handlers. And the politicians, by the way, all have handlers to manage them. They even have acting lessons. Again, they charge the taxpayers for their acting lessons. I did the article a few years ago on that one in Britain, and other countries do it. And of course, they're all taught again never to answer a question directly if it's sensitive at all, or if it's going to commit you to any agenda. You just ask the question you'd wished they'd ask you. That's why when you hear them getting asked straight questions, they answer back this, what are they talking about? Well, that's their wish question, you see. It's nothing to do with what was asked of them. And it's all a con. And again, the public, to even bother voting, you understand young people, if they're idealistic, and I've got over the destructive phase of revolution, you'd think that they'd eventually catch on and say, wait a minute here, it's all corrupt. And you'd hope you'd get even further and realize that the revolutionary leaders are all corrupt as well, and they're on the take from much higher powers, generally the very ones you're protesting are managing it at the top. I'm not kidding you. That's how it really works. It's a vastly different, reality is a vastly different system than what you think it is, what you're trained to think it is. And getting back to the idea of chronology, they give you new normals, and now you see a rapid introduction of new normals all the time. All the time. Years ago, I wrote poems about new normals, years and years and years ago, to come up with the term. And it's widely used since. But you'll find that the folk do adapt rather quickly now, especially under panic. You know, the herd instinct, as they call it, and the herd mentality is all aimed at the herd, at the general population. So is all kinds of warfare and weaponry, by the way. You know, if you look at bioweaponry, biowarfare, it is designed to hit the most amount of people possible, sometimes. But even then, if the ones are designed for the maximum damage on an enemy population, and biowarfare, it won't get everybody. They accept that. There's always individuals who have some kind of immune system difference that enables them to escape it. Sometimes it's a gene or a pair of genes that's enough to get them, to make them survive it. So you seldom never have a truly 100% cull, you see. But you also have ethnic-specific viruses. I did the talk, I think, in the late 90s again, on the reporters that would enter, I think it was from the Telegraph, perhaps. The Telegraph paper, newspaper in Britain, was well connected with the military-industrial complex, and even for good public relations for the military or special forces, they would often use the Telegraph and tip them off, and or even get them to put out little. If something came out we didn't want, They get the Telegraph to do an in-depth interview, that type of thing, which would cover the tracks and expose some stuff at the same time to keep the public happy. And but a reporter did go in to, and I think it was from the Telegraph, could be wrong, to Portland Downs. Other ones went in too, in occasional PR pieces. And they did talk to the scientists, some of the scientists that worked on creating deadly viruses and bacterium and anthrax and everything else. And who tested it on animal populations, and perhaps, we never know, because the number admits it naturally, on human populations in other countries, in third world countries. That was common. And I'm sure it's still common today, you know. I'll touch on that later, perhaps. Because it's even some in some awfully good fictional works as well, or semi-fictional works, about using test populations where in Africa, for instance, where they can contain it when it's a more remote area. They could contain it and observe it and study it much better. Ebola was came out that way too, by the way. So once again, we're living in a very controlled system. The world, to them, is a laboratory. The general population are the lab rats in the laboratory and mice. And even the terminology they use with the population is similar. You see, there's real beings, the important people, the somebodies, and then there's the rest, you see, the lab rats and the mob and all the other terms that they have for the general population. Politicians have it too. And politicians at the top, all the leaders belong to the same clubs, especially one big club at the top. And Carl Quigley did go through that, and others have done it since, about the Council on Foreign Relations or Royal Institute for International Affairs and all that. The guys who gave you world government ideas and worked towards it up to the present time. And they see the world as theirs. They have no problem employing great people in academia, in other words, great minds in their particular fields, to utilize the techniques of mass persuasion on the general population, cultural change of all kinds on the general population. And the sad truth is, with enough time and money behind it and repetition, they can generally get the public to accept whatever it is they're pushing. And yet, most things they're used to persuade you to do something that perhaps you shouldn't do. The terms that Aldous Huxley talked about on his interview with Mike Wallace, he said that the techniques that they had then, in the 1950s, were effective on persuasion, persuading the public. And he said, perhaps these techniques are so persuasive and effective that they're making people accept things that perhaps it's not in their best interest to accept. Well, it's much worse today with the techniques that are used. And you have a consolidation of pretty well all big media and entertainment, too. Remember in the European Union video put up, where they had a lot of the big players there, the persuaders on their own populations, that is, the ministers, the ones people are appointed to do this, that, and the other for the European Union. They had there for the vaccinations, you see. And that's what their title of their talk was. You're pro-vaccination, basically. We are vax. And you'll hear, as I've mentioned last week, one of them actually mentioning that amongst the many things and programs that were unrolling on the public and unleashing on the public, was to using taxpayers' money again, unlimited money, to insert all these messages into dramas and fictional plays and all the TV stations and so on. And they'd fund these plays and just put in, you know, like disease and immunity and herd immunity and death and all that kind of stuff, and just comply and vaccination over and over. And it doesn't matter what kind of play it was or movie or whatever, just get it in there. And that was nothing new, because see, this is used all the time on you with many topics. You see? And I'm getting back. I'm still in the whole art of chronology. Because, it's, again, the first thing is to give a fake reality to the general public. It's quite easy to do, because you see your parents, or our parent, depends, because you're under war, remember. This is a war scenario, constant war. a changing battlefield of war all the time. Financial, with the family too involved, or the destruction of the family, or the new family as they want to call it as well. And they came out with a nuclear family, and now they have the real nuclear family, because you can see right through you, believe you me, and living about you, that is the true nuclear family they were really talking about. So, people don't know. You think you're growing up in your own little bubble again, in your generation. You look around you to the left and the right, and there's all the bubbles of your generation along with you, like a straight line you see. Just ahead of you, you've got the older bubbles living in their generations, and everything was normal to them is drifting off, and you're replacing it with your new normals, which you think you all do yourself. Somehow you think that you designed the clothing that we're... No, you didn't. Somehow you think you designed the hairstyles. No, you didn't. Somehow you think that you designed the music that was promoted, but you know you didn't. Because you see, there are institutions above all these things. This is all part of the culture industry. And they decide what's going to be pushed and what isn't, you see. Do you really think that suddenly, after lots of, you know, different music and so on, and you had rock and all this, you had the glam rock, and until the guys were, there was more hair lacquer on them than hair, I think, and things like that. It went down the tubes, but you went right down to rap. Eventually, just angry sounds, you know. And that was at Devil Meetings. I talked about it years ago, about how you wrap it up. And the spoken word is awfully important. The spell is the spelling, you see. You can cast a spell by spelling. That's why the language is so so used before by different groups, and occult groups too, that run societies, and their little winks and their nods as they talk to each other, and you get a different meaning from it. But they literally had this in the 1700s and 1800s, and movements against it. And yet people who analyzed the words, awfully important. Because it meant a lot, you see. The spoken word in court is what matters when it's uttered, you see. The judge doesn't ask you to spell it. He asks you to speak it. And you're judged by every word that comes out your mouth. Mm-hmm. It goes way back to the Bible, too. So people get confused with it. And you think of the English language. Why on earth would it have so many words where one word could be spelled differently two or three times, but uttered the same way? It's different enough for a purpose, obviously. And it actually is. They don't really need such coding today so much because they are so interwired with the encrypted programs for their own communications at the top, way beyond anything we can imagine. You know? And true, it's really true enough that the folk can't imagine how far advanced all these things are today. But the spell is spelling. It casts a spell. And you get back into it. So now we can also use the fact the words can mean something else on the general public when you want them to buy something. Again, the subconscious takes it a different way. You can manipulate the mind by using subconscious, or almost unconscious, but subconscious suggestions to them without them twigging onto it as to why they suddenly want to drink this brand of beer or something, a sudden urge for it. Of course, the easiest things you talk about are candies and cakes and things like that. People are very suggestible that way, very simple. But again, language is awfully, awfully important. And remember, language also can be visual. Colours are a language as well, for those who haven't figured that out as well. Colours are very important. You're living in a world that hasn't been explained to you. In fact, great pains are made to make sure that you don't really learn them as well, what's really going on. Again, Jacques E. Lowell, a tremendous philosopher, very straightforward and honest about things, who's deceased now, but he talked about propaganda and how you must get the children early for an initial indoctrination. Now you think about it, so what are you doing? If you have if you're in power, if you have you're part of a structure of power that manages millions of people in a nation, then what you have to do is standardize thought. If you can standardize thought, then you're pretty well guaranteed, not exactly by persuasion, but pretty well guaranteed eventually you'll have a population growing up. If you continue at it, they can come to conclusions, predetermined conclusions by the rulers, which what they want you to come to. It's very easy then, you see. That's why most folk around you today that really have never questioned these things, they've never really figured it out. They can't imagine how what you're talking about half the time. They really can't. They can't imagine what you're talking about. What are you talking about? They've never heard of what all these terms and these things that you say happened. They've never heard of them. And yet, here you are, you're telling it to them, and it's completely foreign to them. It's outside their ken, as they say. And they'll test it out. You know, and so-and-so said this, you know what he said? And they'll prattle it off to them and say, oh, that's crazy. Because those who've never really, it's like a vaccination, if it's taken on them, if it's worked, as they say, that's it. And their indoctrination has really worked. Their initial indoctrination worked awfully well at school, and then it's built upon through the curriculum that's drummed or dunned. They used to call it dunned into them. So it's worked awfully well. Why should the tribe that you're born into, because you still think tribally in like a small tribe, even though you're in a big city or a nation with millions, you still think like a small tribe. That's your nature. It's in you. Doesn't matter what country you're in. And you take for granted as a mammal that the older ones are going to take care of you and warn you and look at you. That's what how all mammals work, you see. And you expect the elders and the parents, put that way, to take care and warn you what's bad or dangerous to you. And if you don't get initial indoctrination by the parents, they'll walk right up to something that's going to eat them without any fear, you see. And that's how mammals work. Well, all the things that makes us tick, that's well studied, is what's picked apart in order to exploit us by using our nature, you see. So it's impossible for most folk to think that those at the top that you've voted in, or your parents or your grandparents or whoever it happens to be put in there, are not working for your best interests. It's terribly sad, but that's really how it works. It's very simple. And then when they want to have you go off to war for a few people at the top that want resources or control over energy supplies or whatever it happens to be, they'll use the nation and they'll use the taxpayer to fund it all so the big corporations can profit. But most folk never figure that out either. They're given, about to go to war against these people because they're the worst thing that ever hit the world since Satan, you see. And they're given very simple propaganda because if it's too complicated a story, it can be picked apart. So you keep it simple until you're just left with great chasms which you can't jump over. And that's how they do it. It's very simple stuff. So all the changes that are happening today, to me, are boring because I talked about them at least in the 90s publicly. And before that, even in smaller groups and so on. I knew it all because obviously, and they do publish all their stuff. I really did the reading, the real stuff. I didn't copy somebody else's bio. I just really did it. And I talked about the 90s on radio shows. And I said, you know, that this is what's coming down the pike. Because they publish the stuff. And this is what they wanted to happen. Let's say the Council on Foreign Relations is an example. And the coterie of big think tanks, they have thousands of them across the whole planet. They have them in every nation in the world. I think without exception that these think tanks all work together. And because they're all working, they're all pre-selected at the top. But just like the politicians in every nation are pre-selected at the top. as Quigley said, all we need is one or two people, like a president or a vice president or a prime minister, deputy prime minister, whatever, in every party, you see. So it doesn't matter who gets in, they're on the same agenda. That's why the agenda never changes. You would think long ago the public would have said to the United Nations, that's it, we've had enough with you, but with this international, strange international communism you're pushing, where you won't even let developing nations do their own thing and manage it themselves. There's no way they'd be allowed to do that. They won't allow it at all. It's like sustainability. They're going to keep Africa frozen, basically, and time, because too much energy would destroy what's left of the nation, etc. It's for depopulation. That's what it is. Of course it is. But it isn't just Africa. The eugenicists started with Europe. The advanced nations, technically, technological, and agriculturally, and so on, advanced nations, to sterilize them first. Interesting that, isn't it? And that's when people say, well, who on earth are these folk that manage us? Well, they obviously don't like you. Even the ones that seem to be born amongst you, are they really of you or not? If they ask these questions, how come they have no affinity with you? Well, psychopaths don't. We know that. Psychopaths don't have affinity for you. And some of them seem to revel in their ideas of mass culling of the planet, you know, from the days of Thomas Malthus right up to the present. We must remember, too, the Huxleys. I mean, Huxley's, I think it was the beginning, the guy who made his name, actually, was Thomas Huxley, Sir Thomas Huxley, was united eventually, who became Darwin's bulldog to push the Darwinian theories after Darwin died. Because it tied in with this idea that had been talked about for an awful long time, many, many centuries, long before Darwin, of who was superior to others. Within nations, too, you see. And nobility had always saw that as a right. And they were from God, remember. They thought they were appointed by God if you were royalty in Europe. That's a good one, that one, isn't it? You can't touch me. God put me here. And we'll argue with that then, hey? And that became a real problem with lots of kings and queens over time. And they could do no wrong, because after all, since they were from God, God appointed them, you know, that's how they always said, that, well, they could do anything they wanted to. After all, they were like acting kind of like a general of God, so they could do what you wanted to do. And they did, you know, at times. Often, I mean, they would literally give whole chunks of lands and cut them away, like parts of Scotland and or England, and weddings. And wedding, it's wedding gifts, you see, as intermarried the elite with the elite of different nations. It was generally amongst their cousins. Today, that would seem kind of absurd, but I don't think it's, maybe not, because I think folk today are more gullible. Again, chronology is a better art than it used to be. And folk are more gullible today to really just accept it, you know. Because you think about that. I can remember giving that talk years ago about how they would just give away. I mean, the parts of Northern England, Northumbria and so on, they belonged to Scotland at one time, but they were given away a long time ago as a wedding present. A part of a dowry, I think. It seems absurd. It seemed absurd at the time I was mentioning it and talking about it. But then with the whole the European Union idea, what was awfully important was when we saw the fruition coming, the fruition of the plans of free trade, where it's completely tied up with Marxism, where the nation states would start to disappear as such. But no one realized it was behalf of the big top multinational corporations. And part of England at one point, a few years back, was really taken over by a corporation from, I think, France, you know, maybe even Germany. But they owned a good part of the shores, were given a kind of sovereign territory idea under free trade, which wasn't a new idea, because then you find out the FDR set up ones inside the US that are still there today. And the countries that put in their businesses in those areas have sovereign rights over that territory. Quite amazing, things that you really don't know. But begins back to chronology. So meanwhile, when all this is going on, they're still brainwashing children at school. This is your nation, you know. And we're all happy, happy. They tell you that you're all happy, even though you're asked the questions, you know. Oh, you have no chance to see we're pretty sad, actually, or we're ticked off. You're told you're pretty happy, and you get all these children's books to read, you see, and completely loaded with political correctness of all kinds today, starting about the age of five. Eh? All paid again by the taxpayer. We pay for our balls and chains, our manacles. We pay for them. Everything that shackles our brains, literally, we pay for. Big money to the guys that came up with the ideas of how to insert little bits into stories. We've got nothing for children, eh? To make sure they grow up accepting all the new ideas that your masters have decided are going to be normal, new normals, you see. It's quite fascinating, isn't it, when you think about it. So getting back to what I was talking about chronology, we haven't really left it, because all I've been talking about is chronology and how you get sucked into it. You accept that which is presented to you as real, everything. You're given your opinions. And Alal again went through that, and others have done the same. And I've done it by bits and bytes of information that you don't really consciously think about too much. But somewhere it's assembling inside your mind. Bits and bytes just come together when a question is asked about a particular topic. And you'll just blurt out something if you had bits and bytes off from different newscasters, just little bits and bytes, and your opinion comes out of you, and you haven't ever before this sat down and thought about it consciously and says, I think I'll choose that as my opinion. It's because it's all given to you. You're led to the conclusions. You're always led to your conclusions. That's the art of persuasion, and the art of building consensus has to do with persuasion and consensus management. You're living through it all right now with the idea for COVID, and we must all accept vaccinations for that and everything else, by the way, that they've got lined up for you. It isn't just for that one. They've got a whole range of things they want to stick in you. And they want your cooperation, in fact, even your willingness to allow it to happen. Again, chronology must make the victim participate in their deception. It's for your own good, you see. If they came up to you and said, knock, knock, knock at the door, we're from the government, we want your house from you. And you said to them, well, why? Well, it's for the greater good. We want to move you onto these tents there, because there's folk already living in those tents over there, and we want the world to be equal. And it's not really... So it'll be good for them to see that you're losing your homes, which we'll then take, you see, to put our toffs in. And then there will be more equal at your level, you see. And things like that. You say, no, darn. But if they can persuade you enough, they can get anything they want. Just like Monty Python, The Meaning of Life, the beginning of that particular movie, after the hospital scene with the wonderful machines that go beep, you know, and are £2 million just for the beep itself. And very impressive little flashing lights. Whether they work or not and do anything is a different story, but that doesn't matter. And then they got on to the idea of the men driving up to get livers. If you're consenting to having organs donated, and they come for it, you see. And they, at the end, they persuade the wife of the guy that they're just taking the liver from to put her name down after making her feel so small and insignificant. He says, can we have your liver too then? Oh, yeah, okay, go on. And that's how it's done. You must participate in the con. You see, so it's to do with also belief. Part of tyranny of all kinds. You can have wonderful utopic tyrannies where you're kept in cotton wool, and you won't have a single thought or decision to make by yourself. It won't even require your thought. You'll just automatically respond Pavlovian style into your conditioning, to whatever your governors want, you see. And you go along with it that way, quite happily. To the bitter end, it's for the greater good, you see. We're all in it together. That old slogan, eh? We're all in it together. It keeps me thinking about... a long time ago. I was reading about the RAF, Royal Air Force in Britain. And you had Winston Churchill talking about, we shall fight them on the beaches and all this kind of stuff. And in reality, of course, he was talking about you, would be fighting them on the beaches and so on. But he this is the kind of propaganda they put out for the general public to swallow. Sometimes whole teams work together. Generally, that is the case today. You seldom get anything coming out of a person from their own brain as a talking head. It's done by teams. Even the radio, most folk, even the radio that you think is actually for you, it's got producers and all the rest of it, and it's all worked out and yada yada yada. But anyway, Winston Churchill's given these speeches and the fireside chat ideas that FDR took on as well. But meanwhile, they kept a particular long range. I don't know if there were Shackletons at the time, or that which were the Lancasters, which had massive extra fuel tanks added to them. And they had a whole, basically a squadron of them. And they have two at a time with the engines going for two parts of the war, sometimes for weeks on end. And then maybe a can for a little bit, and then on again. So they could rush their whole families and Winston Churchill and the government out of the country to go to Canada. So, yeah, you'd be fighting on the beaches, etc. But that's how it's done. You know, and of course, Winston Churchill comes out as the great man for a war that maybe could have been averted, you know. Because there's a lot of evidence that Hitler really didn't want all the things he was accused of wanting. And I think personally, if some of them had given some of the land back that was taken from them after World War One, it may have been averted. But the reparations are guaranteed in another war. They had no option but to have another war. And some of the top observers at the treaty in Paris 1919 said the same thing. This is going to cause another war. Anyway, these things. But again, getting back to generations of people. Getting brainwashed, because look what happens. Look how easy it is to stir up segments of society. The more differences of peoples and populations, and even ethnic groups, you can get inside a nation. And this isn't rocket science; it's old knowledge. You can certainly always stir up certain, and even by the genders and so on, and subgenders of the subgenders, etc. You can really stir up people to be radical and start creating chaos on command pretty well if you want it to happen, especially when you supply the leaders of all these groups, and that's other key to it as well. They do. The followers seldom know that, but the ones who are following, they do. Have you noticed that all the rioters in the States, none of them are against the mass vaccinations that are coming? Don't you think that's a bit odd? None of them are against the wars across the world. No. They get switched on and off by unseen forces, don't they? And you don't hear in them demanding the abolition of the corrupt systems of money and having the government, you know, coin or print its own money as it's supposed to. It's all dished out to foreign groups. And a lot of them are foreign groups, actually, foreign-owned. But you don't hear them saying that, or demand. No, they don't. It's very selective. Very strange anarchists today, don't you? And very strange communists. Huh? Where they're getting funded by the richest corporations on the planet, hundreds of corporations, who are all part of the WEF, World Economic Forum, eh? Who are all part as well of the great reset powers for how they run the world. And we're all part of all the global globalization structures that are. But the fact is that they don't stop. See, how come the people that you'd think we'd be protesting, but we're not protesting, how come they're the ones that are funding us all? So what are you protesting about? What are you, at the bottom line, what are you protesting about? If it's all the fault of the crooked system, And it is. It's a crooked system, a way above you. A closed door policy organization at the top. How come no one's protesting that? And yet that's the groups that's going to fund you to protest other things and protest destruction so they can bring in a new system. It doesn't dawn on the followers. They're just full of rage, full of absolute rage. And the rage is fostered. Again, that documentary put out by Millie Weaver there, think what you want about him. It's well produced, maybe. Because you could always ask yourself, who really is producing all these things? But you got insight into some of the intelligence agencies and how they work, and how government works with them, and how big corporations, the military-industrial complex, work with them too. And what you see in that too, I'll just touch on it briefly, is the fact that you got all these people at the bottom getting funded by the biggest, richest corporations on the planet, who go to the WEF, these corporations, they run it, who talk about the need to depopulate the planet, etc. They're funding folk to riot in the streets and burn places and defund the police. Well, in the documentary, and I've seen this before in other places as well, they've got some articles mentioned there, and big meetings have been happening over the last year or two. It goes way back further than that. They want, don't you understand, the corporations have already got their bids in to put robots on the streets that you're going to fund anyway. How do you fancy trying to debate with a robot when you're asked, why are you burning down this house? What do you think you're going to tell them? A robot doesn't care about your emotions or what you've suffered or anything else or your mental state. It doesn't care. But they've got big contracts right now. And the companies have been named. This is the evolution of the military-industrial complex here. From not just this massive surveillance society that was put forth. What would we do in a post-war world? Well, we'll have to go into complete surveillance. And then what? Well, then they go into policing the world. So how do you get folk that they're, again, human beings, we're dealing back at the human being, this problem of human beings, eh? They don't like changing, eh? They might not like it if we just start putting robots on the street. I can remember years ago giving similar talks from the science articles when they had the K9 units, the K, you know, the K9, you know, the letter K. And it was to get used to the ideas of they would take over from actual real dogs for sniffing dogs. And they'd be robots, you see. And then they showed you the little quaint little pocket-sized things that some of the guys in customs had that could sniff drugs and sniff this and sniff that. And sniff all kinds of unmentionable things, perhaps. But the fact is, they had them years ago. And that, all you do now is start putting it all into the robots, eh? And put them on the streets. I think China has already put some out already. They've had articles in the last few weeks about that, and how they're expanding it. Isn't it odd that, again, we're called nations that are at loggerheads with each other, aren't we? We're all competing, we've got loggerheads. But they all do the same things at the same time, eh? That's just coincidence, though. Of course. But again, it's the easiest way to get it in this is to get the people to demand you defund the police. Isn't it beautiful? Get them to demand what you want. Otherwise, in a peaceful society, they would say, we don't want them to be arguing with robots. I mean, how are you going to explain yourself to a robot? You know? That's going to go through a whole sequence of events, and if it decides that you're raising your voice or belligerent, or is deciding that you're mentally unstable because your voice is raising, you might just get zapped or lasered or worse, you see, or tasered, and or worse. So there you go. Get the people to demand it. Why will they demand it? Because, you see, once you pull the police out, you've got all these social ills that have been building up for years, with mass unemployment, mass drug taking of all kinds of stuff, getting shipped in, etc. I've been following the drugs for years and years and years and years, and it's a fascinating thing that they just couldn't stop the drugs, eh? Supposedly. And then you find that every intelligence agency and special forces has had people down Latin America and elsewhere, but Latin America, all over the place, because that's how they get their money from their back budgets, is the drug trade, massive drug trade, eh? So it's quite fascinating, as I say. But again, chronology, eh? So you're supposed to sit home, at home, and watch these detective stories, and whether it's at CSI, eh? As they diligently, no matter what happened to poor old the sod that lived on the street and died on this, you got this whole team's never going to sleep. They can't sleep worrying about this poor old sod that lived on the street and died. They want to find out what killed them or who killed them. Eh? They're going to spend millions on that because that's what they tell you to do. Do you really believe that? Do you really, really believe that? But this is what they give you, is for reality. Complete fiction. I mentioned it years ago too, back in the 90s. I said also, here's what they give you. Like, here's all these complaints, and I reeled off complaint departments for different social things, even social services, things that you may need. You'll think, well, maybe I won't ever need those things, whatever it is. Or help because you're stuck at home and you've been partially disabled or something, even temporarily. What do you do? Well, you call these, you know. So you phone up the health this and the health that, and sorry, they can't help you. You find out, I said, these are all tools that are put out there for you to use that you think are there. You're paying for them. You know you're paying for them through all their taxes and so on. You say, well, that's wonderful. We've got all these things that they're to help me if I'm ever in trouble. But they're rubber tools. They're rubber. Because when you whack them on the road, they bounce. Just like a check, you know, poof. They're not used to you. They're not going to do you any good. So everything sounds wonderful until you need it, you see. The general public are managed. It's the hardest thing to get through their heads that they're actually managed. They're not managed because the agencies are there to help them. They're managed because the agencies are there to make things work on behalf of the masters who own you all. That's what he was there for. Otherwise, it would be utter chaos, you see, at times. And people don't want to believe they're getting managed, you see. Of course you're getting managed. Of course you're getting managed all the time. Your opinions are given to you. The way you behave are given to you. If you get married, don't get married is given to you. All these things are given to you. You see? A lot of what became you was given to you. I think growing up in Britain, it was way ahead of a lot of countries with its psychological techniques embedded in plays and dramas. I think Canada followed it pretty well because the so-called Commonwealth countries are all ex-British Commonwealth, you see. They're still called Commonwealth countries or the Friends of the Commonwealth. Because the elite took your wealth from the commoners, I think, for the whole lot of you. So they could live in big castles and things. But Britain definitely exported its techniques to Estonia and Canada. France did pretty well on its own. It didn't really need the help. You know, France is one of the first countries that really accepted a system based really on an advanced socialism that came out of, they call it Jacobinism, but it was really a form of communism. And they tried to toss out all the old systems and get rid of it entirely. That's always the same thing. When you see year zero starting, it's communism. It's the same movement, regardless of what they give you as the front people to lead it, you see. It's always the same movement, and of course, they give you new everything, including a new days of the week, and even a longer week. I think they tried 10 days at a time for a new week in France at one point. And also, that thing that really annoys them in France, they wanted free love and all that, without the consequences. So you had, you know, backstreet abortionists just opening up quite legally at that time to get rid of, which often killed the women as well. And also had a plague within 10 years of orphans on the streets that they had to get rid of as well. And they did too, they had ways of getting rid of them. So these things are nuisances. You always see the same thing cropping up over and over, the same darn things right up to the present day. But France did well, because if you ever watch the French movies, you haven't got a clue what's going on. I'm not talking about the language, I'm talking about the story. You know, and they go through these almost surrealistic settings. And you'll follow it thinking, eventually it's got to get to some relevant, pertinent point, you know. But they don't. They don't. And you're left feeling, ugh, yuck. Very much like the British BBC ones, which at least gave you points. BBC, everything that they showed you about marriage was horrible. Horrible. Every marriage was made in hell. And the women were always nagging the men and yelling at them, and it was dysfunctional, and until no one wanted to get married, you know. And the children were out of control, yada, yada, yada. But it was all done deliberately. Of course, it was part of the psychological operations that they were doing on the public for the new system. But they would promote more and more women's liberation and sexual revolution for the women during this whole period too. And of course, that's why National Health Service, we've got to be honest about this, that was one of the main reasons that the people who brought it in, and I think the one for Canada said the same thing years ago, it was to deal with the population problem, unwanted children, etc. Unwanted was the new term. Because most children are wanted if an economic system is okay. But even part of the dissuasion of having children is to use economics against people wanting children. It's well understood and actually taught in the higher sociological classes. And economists have come out with this quite openly. I mean, what do you think Malthus was initially, you know? So everyone has to have a purpose for the elite, as opposed to being a purpose for each other, you know? So you have to serve them, and again, back to chronology, you've got to believe what they tell you. It's for the common good and the greater good and all the rest of it. You have to sacrifice all the time. Whereas going off to war, you see, and they'll paint whatever enemy is with the most horrible brushes, that you really did think that you know, Lucifer or Satan has just appeared there in the shape of Osama bin Laden. Huh? And everybody else you've heard of since then. Huh? Telling you, it's quite something what you're living through. And then you had Saddam Hussein, another, well, he, again, this evil just reincarnates immediately into somebody else. Right? And all the way to Libya, of course, and Gaddafi, and then to Syria. No, it's one after the other, isn't it? And who's benefiting in America from this? It's not the people. We get stiff with the bills for all. You know that. Same with Britain too. And you have these strange intelligence agencies way above. They have got nothing to do with you, apart from using you. Because, you see, they belong to something different completely from what you think of protecting you. But we must always accept, again, our part in it, you know. And you go along with it. And most folks don't stop paying their taxes for all. No. Again, this herd mentality that's encouraged. It isn't encouraged. You know? You don't want to protest that and stop paying your tax. I can remember back in the 90s, and again, after 9/11 in 2001, certain folk here and there stopped paying their taxes. They didn't want these wars. They knew it was coming. And then enough of it. And why should you pay taxes for things that really are going to have such a blowback effect on all of you and destroy your nation eventually? Look at all the nations across Europe. The face of Europe has changed with mass migration and under the guise of refugees. And they haven't stopped yet. They still want Iran. Iran's been losing its population for years now, because would you wait in a country where you're told every week you're going to get bombed into the dust like Iraq? Huh? Of course you wouldn't. That's part of warfare. Forced migration by terrorizing the public, you see. It's all taught in military academies. So you must participate, as I say, in your own deception. In your hardest part. And mentioning the deception, as I say, is to get through to folk around you who swallow it all, thinking it is too big to be all a lie. Huh? It's too big for all to be a lion. And yet, here you go. You are just, you know, one of the cattle. When you realize, and they're talking openly now, of just not, once they pass the euthanasia laws, they've got a next step and the next step and the next step to go, until literally they want you to just kill yourself before you hit 65. Quite openly, some of them. Again, you're back to the meaning of life. Can we have your liver, you know? Oh, okay, then I guess I'm so small and tiny and insignificant. That's what's getting done to you. And again, using the same persuaders, like Yale University, or I mentioned it before, the links are put up before, where they're spending millions of your tax money for these professional, you know, people who lie as a profession, using psychology and behaviorism and all the rest of it, to persuade you to accept vaccinations and things and to go along with the flow and do what you're told. And even to cause dissension and to get groups to turn on you if you don't wear a face mask or you don't believe in it or whatever. These folk should be, and again I mentioned it before, a tyrant's hall of shame. Their faces should be exposed, and you add to them from the politicians that you waste your money on these swine, let's call them swine, who professionally lie to the public by using psychology and your human nature against you. Huh? Absolutely. I'm quite serious about it. You got to start naming them and add their faces to it. Put them on it. I'm telling you. The tyrants. And the folk are going to profit from it, like billions and billions of dollars. And the Bill Gates and all the rest of them and the Fauci's, they're all in on it. The ones who deny any other treatment except the ones that they've got shares in. Hey, come on here. And their whole idea that nothing's going to work except their vaccinations. And they'll even tell you whether it works or not. Meanwhile, they're having herd immunity amongst the public. And they hate that. Oh, no. Well, it might not last long. Well, if it lasts a few years, it's as long as any vaccine's going to do. Huh? And apart from that, there's no side effects if you develop your own immunity, your own immune system, antibodies. Eh? But my God, it's free. There's no profit off that, is there? Mm-hmm. We live under such incredible corruption. We're a herd, and they're the farmers. They see us as animals, and they see us as their animals. Our job is to be fleeced, huh? For them. I'm quite serious about it. That's how they talk about us, them, you know, the little people. That's all of you. And arrogance through years and years and generations of academia and to absurd learning, you know, absurd learning in absurd areas. The ivory tower really is just wispy. It blows in the wind up there. You know, there's nothing to hold it grounded to anything. It's so anti-fantasia. They really believe in their superiority. And they're right to rule us. So again, it comes down to fear. But again, it's an evil system. You can't say it's just human nature. The scariest part for naive people who've swallowed their indoctrination is even accepting there's incredibly evil people in the world. They don't have horns, right? Except if at least they've had them implanted. And they actually do that with some people now, eh? They implant these horns. Surgeons will do that. But do no harm. Where did that go? But they'll actually really some kind of cement, with some kind of cement, a horn on your skull if you want it there, you know. I know someone who was in a hospital in New York City, and she was a nurse, and she went on one day and... There's a guy lying in the bed with a horn on his head. And the nurses were told, don't laugh at him, you know, don't laugh at anybody. And do you realize how hard it would be not to kind of laugh or equip something to this guy? I couldn't have shut my face, no way, you know. But this is where they brought society to, eh? Because there's nothing. If you're doing something like that surgically, I don't care what you're doing. That there's definitely harm being done there, and different levels of it. It's the same with using surgery to supposedly cure mental problems. You can't do that. They tried that.